Welcome to Ever Beyond.
Broadcast through the Wolf Spirit Media Network.
Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond.
Please join us in the chat room at www.wolfspiritradio.com/listen. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
And welcome. Good afternoon, good evening, good morning. Welcome. This is Ever Beyond on Ever Beyond Radio from Scotland. Broadcasting through the Wolf Spirit Radio Network. And, we're a subscriber-supported station. So if you come along to our Joomla site and join and subscribe, it's only $5 a month. And you get a month's worth of download time where you can download as much as you like. I mean, it'd probably take you more than a month to download it all, to be honest. You know, it takes several days to copy it across the web, you know, on these high-speed lines. So, anyway, do your best. You know, knock yourself out. You for $5, you could download my entire catalog and, you know, listen to my shows all for years, or to Rebecca Jernigan, or to everything Dave Corso put out, or Thomas Hughes, or one of these fabulous, fabulous hosts. So, without further ado, everybody wants to know. You might hear my voice. I'm not as bright as I normally am. I cut myself with a power saw the other day, but it really, as they say, it's a flesh wound, but it didn't half hurt. It didn't half. And so I've got a doctor on the show. So, well, it's my, it's our regular, excuse me. What's wrong with this? What's up with you? Yeah. Everything's going, you know what it feels like? We're going over a cattle grid. What do you call them in the States?
I have no idea. I'll go with cattle grid.
Well, you know, when you come out of a farm area, there's a, it's like a cow can't cross it.
Oh, I'm very familiar with them. When I lived in Scotland, I remember seeing them a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah. When you drive over these things, it's like, and your car is shaken to pieces. And it just feels like we're going over one of those, but nobody can feel it, nobody can hear it, nobody can smell it. But it's just like, you know, I saw somebody on Facebook and she's got these crystals and they just shattered.
Ah.
You know, there's a lot of shattering and, I've had some batteries that have just completely discharged themselves without being run on anything.
Well, I mean, I did hear, I don't know if this is true, I think you're probably more in tune with what's happening with the resonance of the earth. I thought there was a spike the other day, like it went up super high. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, there's a Schumann resonance, and even if you look at the solar output, which is coming out to satellites that they're picking up on, and they're looking at various factors like the solar wind and the magnetic flow. And I've got this correlation, is that whenever there's a magnetic disturbance in this magnetic flow, it's normally a very smooth up and down. But when it goes really spiky and sharp, is that people become spiky and sharp, and you know, our feelings are magnetic. This period of time, our sun is doing something that it doesn't normally do. It's not normally as rough as it is. So it's like it's going over this cattle grid, and we're feeling, you know, we're in the back of the car wondering what's happening. Or maybe we're in the back of the truck.
Right at the tailgate.
That's
where you feel it the most. Or the back of the bus.
So, my dear, sweet Shelyn Tetro, how are you?
I'm doing great.
I've been preambling.
Preambling is fine.
I've preambled all over you.
No, it's totally, I don't mind.
Sweetheart.
Yeah, so I like that, you know, if there's these, I don't know if it's a solar flare or any kind of spikes, with the sun or the Schumann resonance, that we as people, we feel it as well and it affects us. And that's kind of the view of Ayurveda, is that we're not separate from anything else. So of course we're going to feel the effects. We just get too distracted in our daily dramas to always pay attention to it, you know? So sometimes, you know, I'll have either a dip in energy that I can't quite place a finger on the cause, or, you know, some kind of, emotional intensity. And, you know, you always want to try to give a reason for it, like some kind of correlation. Oh, this happened in my life, so that's why I'm feeling this way. But sometimes it's much bigger than that. Sometimes it's something that's happening on a planetary scale. And, I've actually just started probably what will hopefully be a really long journey in studying Jyotish. And, JP, I'm sure you're familiar with what that is.
Actually, Jyotish sounds like a children's writer.
Oh, yeah. No, Jyotish is the science of astrology from the Vedic tradition. What's that?
Fabulous, I say.
Yeah, it is. I'm so excited. I'm so excited to be finally adding that to my education. But it's, you know, it's similar to, the zodiac, the tropical system that most people are familiar with. But it's from the Vedic perspective. So there are some differences, and of course a lot of similarities. So I'm really excited to finally be bringing that into my practice. Because it is used in Ayurvedic medicine as part of the diagnostics. So when you're working with a patient, you use astrology, you know, you look at the patient's chart, and it can certainly help you to understand their past karmas and also their tendencies for imbalance and some diseases that they may be privy to that you can help them work through. So super
wow.
Exciting.
And you know, these are these guys that you go, these Indian Swami astrologers, and you say, tell them your birth date, and they can almost like, they can run a chart in their heads.
Yes.
They can see, I mean, I suppose in a way, what they're not seeing a chart, but they're seeing the position of the planets like a clock. Like,
exactly.
Like we would be looking at a clock, but with multiple hands, obviously.
And I think they also can see where you are placed, you know, in that three-dimensional or even higher clock, as you say. You as this little speck, this little being, where you're placed in that map. It's quite extraordinary.
Wee, 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 tiny little speck. Anyway, from this tiny little speck to your tiny little speck, What do I do about my hand?
Well, I know.
All right. So the first thing is like sore trauma. Now I imagine that you live in logging country.
Somewhat.
Yeah.
Somewhat.
You know, you go to the hospital, you say sore trauma, they know what to do. They just need someone to sew you up, you know, and take
X-rays.
Yeah,
and so you didn't need stitches.
Oh yeah, I needed stitches. Oh yeah, it was a big ragged cut. It wasn't nice.
Any nerve damage or?
I'm not sure yet. I can feel, you know how it is when your skin is inflamed, you know, it feels like everything's ultra sensitive anyway.
Absolutely.
So I can't really tell exactly what sort of nerve stuff has gone on. It's still a little bit swollen. But mm-hmm. You know, I'd expect that.
Yeah, has it been about a week? About 7 days? Or?
Not even 7 days.
Oh my gosh, fresh.
Yeah. Yeah. Goodness. It's still, yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
But the problem is like, I'm kind of trying to use it normally. But I'll reach for something like a regular mug of tea, and it's the stretching open of my hand that pulls on the stitches. And that's the thing. So number one, I want to be able to restore my hand to its full and perfect condition.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want any of these bits to heal together. Cause that's,
oh,
happened.
I see.
That's happened in my body before, a long time ago, 30 years ago. I had what they call, I think, an adhesion,
mm-hmm.
where
so
something was
damaged
and everything stuck together.
Sure. Yeah, well, once you get to a certain point of healing, you have to wait until the wound heals a little bit more, then it's still too fresh. But when you get to the point where it starts to get itchy, a little bit scabby and itchy, you can gently work with just on one end of the incision, of where the, not the incision, where the wound was. You can pull it gently longitudinally in the lengthwise.
Uh-huh. Along its length, yeah.
Yeah, along its length, as opposed to, you don't want to separate the wound, but you can gently, with a very light pressure on your skin, you just gently pull up or down. And you have to wait at least 90 seconds, because that's how long it takes for any kind of adhesions that are forming in the tissue to begin to relax and stretch a little bit. So you just have to, you just gently hold it, and you're kind of like, there you go. Okay, go ahead. You can stretch a little bit. And so that'll keep those adhesions from binding up. Does that make sense?
That does very much. And I don't know if I could have done that 30 years ago, because the particular adhesions were, I suppose there would be yoga exercises or something like that.
Yes, with breath work and also working with a practitioner. Yes. Well, I know you suffered internal injuries as well with your motorcycle.
Oh yeah, there were loads. I mean, it was
the
like this
death.
Was the least of my, worries at the time, but it turned out to be quite a bit of a pain in the ass. Later on. Anyway,
yeah,
so.
It was like your shamanic, rebuilding of the body. Destruction and rebuilding of the body.
Oh,
I'm
totally.
Sure.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. But yeah, for now, with your hand, you can do that. But also, I don't know, whenever you're allowed to wet your hand, I don't know if they gave you a time period or not. At the hospital, did they give you a time period where you could start?
Well, this is the thing. I've taken all the dressings off, so it's just, open to the air with the stitches, and I'm being very circumspect, obviously, very tender with it, and not, but I am actually, you know, I'm easily able to use my computer mouse, so it's fine. People are, like I keep saying, you know, people are saying, ah, don't send me Skype texts. How are you? It's like, how's your hand? It's like, it hurts to type this. It's okay. Well, yeah, tell me more about it. No, it hurts to type this. All right, so by the way, people, if you want to talk to me, you can talk to me, but I'll just kind of click at you.
you'll be brief.
Yeah,
I'll be
terse, perhaps.
Terse, yes.
And,
that's the word that came into my head as well, terse.
Terse, yes.
Slight. Except I didn't say it your way, terse. I have to work on my Scottish accent.
This isn't Scottish, this is a BBC accent.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so, yeah. I live in Scotland, but I speak BBC. I speak BBC English, which is, I don't know, it's not so good anymore. The BBC used to be quite nice people, but now it's, they used to call it Auntie Beeb, it's a bit weird now. Everything's a bit weird now. So here we are in 2017, you know, there are some things that have been established that aren't so weird, you know, like Ayurvedic measures and, you know, it's like you've been holding an escrow to us. Look, we still have sense over here. Just, we'll wait for your madness to subside and you come. you know, obviously, you know, this is something that you personally have seen, you know, there's got to be some sanity here in this world, and you saw it in this tradition. Or was it naturally? Where did it start for you?
Oh gosh, wow. That's such a great question, and of which I don't have an answer. When it started for me, I mean, I guess when I came into this incarnation, just with the innocent curiosity of a child, and listening to, all children do, they listen to their hearts. And so Ayurveda speaks to me because, like I said before in the beginning, it doesn't separate us from the rest of existence. You know, we are all the same stuff. And Ayurveda is really, really describes what we're made of very eloquently in the form of different elements, which we've talked about in past shows, but we can talk about again. And it also helped me to understand that the reason why we should try to care for our body, mind, and spirit in this lifetime is so that we can all live our own personal dharma or our own personal paths. And that's going to be different for every single person, but it is always going to be in some form of service. So, and you know, that can take many different forms, of course, but we are definitely here to help each other out and to help each other remember that we are all part of existence. And what happens is all of us at some point forget. So there's this forgetting that occurs as we come down into third density. We forget that we're connected to every other particle of existence. And in our forgetting, we begin to experience suffering and disease. So as an Ayurvedic practitioner and also many other types of healers, you know, we're here to help each other remember. And so once I came to that understanding through various teachers, you know, it was just falling in love with that, falling in love with Ayurvedic medicine. And also I feel that because it's such an old tradition and it's sort of been able to survive through the millennia, it wouldn't have survived if it didn't make sense and it wasn't truth. So that was also very attractive to me. Actually right now I'm in the middle of going back to school. Oh my God. It's a never ending process. It's in my chart.
These things that is like, several lifetimes learning.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's absolutely true. And, you know, I do feel, as many healers feel, you can sometimes tap into that source where it is about just remembering and it's not necessarily intellectual, you know, where your true healing and service to others happens. But, you know, I am here in the here and now and I need to kind of remember on an intellectual level. So there's a lot of the slog work of, you know, being in school, being in class, memorizing Sanskrit terminology so that you can have a better understanding. But I tell you, it's a lot and I have a little ways to go still. So, you know, I do see patients and I have a private practice. So I do work with people now and I have been for about 11 years, but, there is an opportunity to take it to another level. But that will entail, you know, more time in the classroom. And, it's one of those things. It's worth it and it's lovely and it's hard. It's all those kind of things mixed together. So I have an exam coming up in May. So everyone think good thoughts for me in May to get through my next exam. But I thought we could talk a little bit since it's springtime in our part of the world, in our hemisphere. I thought it would be really fun if we could talk a little bit about Ayurveda's perspective on fertility.
Ah, and, fertility. Yes.
Yeah. You know, I know that's, you know, written in, you know, pagan mythologies and many other cultures. And then Ayurveda, of course, has its own view how to manifest fertility, how to nurture it, how to recognize when there's issues with fertility. And, you know, there's many different ways to look at fertility. I will be speaking, of course, about the actual ability to produce other beings, but, you know, fertility can mean any kind of expression of creativity.
Yeah. Even if you're not creating babies.
Exactly.
You can create, works of art.
Exactly.
Works of food. Works of building. You know, we're continually creating if we're left to our own devices.
Exactly. Yeah, fertility to me it's the ultimate preparation and ground for creative expression. So say if a person is kind of experiencing imbalances with fertility, then that will affect any kind of creative expression that they may wish to have. So even if a person is not wishing to, you know, procreate, fertility is still important. It's a really important aspect of our vitality as people here. So, you know, I can definitely talk about ways to help foster this idea of fertility within oneself. If you do have people in the chat that are interested in asking questions, I can do my best to help support them. I also want to put out there just briefly, if you don't mind, JP, that this is a really great time for your listeners. If they have a question for me about their health, this is a really great opportunity for them to ask me. I do offer 15-minute complimentary consultations, but that is more just to see if they feel like working with me is going to be a benefit for them at that time. So I just wanted to clarify that a little bit, because I don't think I was clear on that the last time. So, you know, your listeners are welcome to ask questions if they want to at this point. That's fine. Okay, so I hope that's clear. So fertility is, like I said, it's a preparation in ourselves for our ultimate creative expression. And like JP mentioned a second ago, this can be for anything, whatever your little baby is. It could be another being that you want to create, or manifesting an idea that you have, writing a book, or actually, JP, I ordered your the booklet that you put together to create your own copper pyramid. So
Have you looked at it yet?
I looked through it very briefly. I just jumped at the chance to get it because I'm like, well, right now I don't have the space to create one. I do copper smithing, so that was exciting for me to even think about creating a pyramid out of copper. And it's very mass heavy, which is wonderful because that's something I'm very useless at. I have some kind of a block in my brain about when it comes to math, which is really a shame because it can be quite a beautiful language. So it looked like it was very well planned out in terms of the mathematics of getting angles.
I mean, I've basically done it. I've done the maths for everybody.
Yeah, and I can't do that. So that's such a gift. And that's a great example of a person expressing their dharma, expressing their path, sharing it with others. There isn't the energetic exchange. I think you charged very low pounds for it, and which was very fair. And you're supporting other people who don't have the gift of math, because I definitely don't, but yet facilitating people to create and heal. So it's just a great collaboration, and I look forward to seeing more and more examples of that happening. Have you listened to Michael Tellinger's recent work about Ubuntu?
I know of Michael, I'm destined to get him on the show within a few months.
I think that would be really great. I know he's going to be touring, or he's in the middle of touring in the U.S., or about to tour, I think in June. But from what I understand, and I really do need to research it more, I think that there's a lot of fertile ground there with his ideas of kind of reconstructing the layout of Western culture, and bringing in the idea of prosperity for everyone, but also making it very practical. He's very pragmatic from what I can tell, because he's proposing a certain plan and a way to implement Ubuntu town by town. So going to like mayors of small towns within the US and Canada and other countries all over the world, and proposing to the mayors, let's try this out. Let's try out this experiment of creating a new, or it's not really new, but a different way of interacting and being with each other and creating prosperity for all. So I'm really excited. And yeah, I really hope you get to interview him so that your listeners can learn more about that.
Fabulous. But, I mean, we have been talking about Ubuntu for quite a while, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know where it happened? It happened at Standing Rock.
Of course it did. Yes, absolutely. Perfect example.
It was very strange, because we have a host, Audrey.
Yes.
Who was, you know, for the last sort of 5 months, or you know, last, you know, speaking for several months about, yeah, we got to do Ubuntu here on this planet and da 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 da. And then he goes to Standing Rock, and there it manifests before his eyes. And it was fantastic to hear him describe that. You heard that.
I did listen to some of his broadcasts, absolutely. I feel a kinship with him. He feels like a brother. Actually, so you do as well. I actually had a dream about you several months ago, and it wasn't you in your form now, but I recognized it as you. So that was pretty amazing.
Cool. Did you get a name?
I didn't get a name, but you were a humanoid figure. You were, well, I don't want to, it wasn't particularly positive. It was more like a recollection of something that happened, some interaction that you had that wasn't totally positive, but you were emanating such a strong feeling of love outward to kind of everyone. It was pretty profound. You were larger, I would say like maybe 6 foot humanoid, no hair, like you were bald completely, no beard in that one. It's hard for me to remember, but you, and quite strong in your physicality, but sort of soft as well. I don't know. It's hard to describe. But you were battling with someone, another entity at the time. So.
And presumably I didn't prevail.
I'm not laughing. I'm sorry. I'm not. You didn't prevail, but you did not prevail. Does that make sense? It's not like you came to a final demise or anything like that. It was almost like I got a little snippet, a little picture of an interaction that you had. But it was interesting. We could talk more about it off air if you want.
Yeah. Definitely. So yeah. Meanwhile, back at everybody, hey, we're talking to other people. So meanwhile, back at, so there's the creative flows, and you know, at this time of year, as you know, everybody's aware, you know, the sap is rising and everybody's feeling a little frisky and who's next and kind of thing. So yeah, there's a lot of that going on.
Yes, absolutely. And just to go back to Ubuntu, because that is so much related to abundance, and when you do feel fertile, there's also this pairing of abundance that you also experience. And what I saw happening or witnessing, I just was witnessing, obviously, from an outside perspective, the Ubuntu movement that happened at Standing Rock, I thought in my mind that, gosh, if other people could come and join the indigenous peoples and bring in, and that may have happened to a small degree, bring in all these free technologies, these free energy technologies, and just begin to expand that town. And it may happen more and more now since that started at Standing Rock. That's really the way it's going to happen. You know, it's going to happen like that, really from the roots up, and hopefully with Tellinger's proposals as well. So it's kind of an exciting time. I feel very positive about that. Cause it's just gotten so bad, so blatantly bad, in our, political climate that, and like in an obvious way, it's been subversive for so long, but now it's becoming so obvious that, I think people will be motivated and inspired to actually finally, try out different ways of being. So. It's a good time. But with fertility, you know, you talked about the sap rising. And so that, from an Ayurvedic perspective, when we look at the seasons, so in our hemisphere, we're coming out of winter into spring. So everything that's been frozen up, bound up, is now melting. And so this also includes, of course, the saps in trees and all the pollens and everything, and of course within us as well. Now, one way that manifests for people is a lot of people get head colds around this time, you know, like sinus-y, boogery kind of head colds, because everything that's been frozen within us starts to melt. So it's not like you're all of a sudden sick. It's just that change, that shift in the season brought about a more obvious shift within yourself. So a word, I'm going to give you a Sanskrit word because I tend to do that. Not too many. I just give a few usually. But there is a term in Ayurveda that is called rasa, R-A-S-A. And so it has a couple of different interpretations for the word. And one of them is sap or nectar. But it is also reflective of the fluids of our body. So the fluid tissue of our body is called rasa. And so rasa is also our sense of taste. So, which is, you know, if you think about when we taste things, you know, the saliva in our mouth, it's very fluidy. The water element is there. We are mostly water. Our bodies are these fluid water bodies, mostly. And so with rasa, that's the first tissue that's formed in our body. And so we need to, if our rasa is nourished and we're like juicy and moist, then we can also experience great fertility within ourselves. If our rasa, the fluids of our body, is dried up and depleted, then we don't feel fertile. We actually feel a sense of lack or dissatisfaction. That's really a feeling that is acquainted with when someone has low rasa, low fluid in their body. They feel a constant sense of dissatisfaction. So people can experience that for short periods of time, or, you know, if you're a listener and you're like, oh, that's something that happens again and again for myself. I constantly I'm never satisfied. I feel like this dissatisfaction. It's also often coupled with lower vitality, like lower energy levels. So it's really good to cultivate and nourish our rasa, the fluids of our body. Another reason why it's really important to nourish the rasa in our body, the rasa tissue, is because it ultimately feeds the rest of the tissues of our body that form. So rasa being the first, if we don't have strong, good, fluidic, healthy, vital rasa, then the rest of the tissues of the body that get formed after that formation will suffer. So, does that make sense? Am I explaining that?
Yeah. The word that we use in our current parlance is juicy.
Yeah, juicy. Absolutely. Yeah, if you're not feeling juicy, then your rasa is low. So this can happen to a certain extent somewhat naturally as we age. There's different stages in people's lives. Earth and water is the first stage when we're children, and then fire and a little bit of water when we're in our adulthood. And then as we go into our elder years, and for women that's going to be postmenopause, and for men generally after the age of 60, we go into our air and etheric stage of life, which is naturally going to be a little bit drier. So that's actually, I spoke about that a little bit on the talk I did on Ayurveda and aging, that when we're in the elder stages of life, you really need to protect your rasa, the fluids of your body, because there's a natural tendency for more ether and air to prevail in the body. Now everything has a purpose, and as ether and air increases in that time of life, that's its purpose is to dematerialize us and to prepare us either for our next incarnation or to release us from our physical self. So there is a reason for it, but you can kind of make it a more gentle transition if you can take care of your rasa. So one way to do that, well, there's a few ways to do that, but a really foundational way to take care of the rasa of your body, and you can't have too much. You can't have too much rasa, and there's ways to balance that as well. But one way to maintain healthy rasa is through how we digest things in our body. So Ayurveda is definitely focuses on the physical body, but there's a lot of understanding of our metaphysical selves as well, and that's never ignored. But there's just such great practical practices that we can incorporate for our physical bodies that then also will affect our etheric and spiritual bodies. So for rasa, in order to promote healthy rasa, you need to have strong digestive powers. So that would be the fire, our digestive fires in our body. And so that could be how we take things in through our eyes, how we, what we smell, we take in through our sense of smell, our sense of touch, our sense of taste, how we can transform what we take in from our, from our outside world into our bodies, how well we can digest that. And that will create really healthy rasa. And so I can give you another name, another Sanskrit term for that. Our digestive fire. It's called Agni.
Agni. I've heard of Agni.
Yeah, I've talked to you about Agni before, just because it's so foundational to health. So Agni means fire. And when it's in relation to Ayurveda and the body, it means our digestive fires, not just of our digestive system, but also of all of our senses, how we digest things. So that's a really important aspect for us to, take care of. So we take care of our rasa by taking care of our digestive fires. And then it's like, well, how do you take care of your digestive fires? That's like the next step.
Shailin, how do you take care of your digestive fires? Actually, Saffron's saying, how do you take care of your rasa? And I think we basically say, you know, you moisturize, keep drinking, you know, keep rehydrating and stuff.
Definitely hydrating.
Oils. Because oils are really important for moisture as well, because the oils lock the water in.
That is absolutely, absolutely true. Some people will think, you know, if I weigh, let's say 120 pounds and I drink 60 ounces of water, then I'm going to be hydrated. And that may not necessarily be true. Some people, don't take in enough healthy oils in their diet. And so that, if you have all this water running through you, but no strong container to hold it, then you can still be dehydrated. You can also deplete your body by drinking too much water. You know, you can tax your kidneys, and that also can be problematic. But even before that, even before taking in proper oils and enough water, your Agni has to be strong and balanced. And so there are different ways to do that, and some ways to do that would be lifestyle, like how you live your life, how you take in your food, when you take in your food, just as much as what you're taking in. So this is the really powerful part of Ayurvedic medicine, or one of the really powerful parts, is that you're bringing your conscious awareness into your practice of taking in nourishment. So one way to do that, and I think this is a problem for a lot of people, is it's a very mundane practice, but it's really helpful, is to actually have your meals, to eat your food at the same time every day. So to have your breakfast, your lunch, and your dinner at the same time, and also at the proper time when Agni is going to support digestion. So it's actually true that noontime, your Agni, your digestive fire, is at its highest point. And so that is a really beneficial time to actually take in your largest meal. Now, I think it's probably pretty similar in Scotland. You call it tea. You call dinner tea. And you call lunch dinner. Isn't that right? I don't know.
Oh, don't ask me, because I'm half Canadian, so.
Well, it's
breakfast, lunch, and well, it used to be supper, but I got middle class during my time, and now it's dinner, and supper is at 6, and dinner is at 8.
Oh, so you have second supper.
Well, you know, supper's, you know, when you're sitting around the TV with the family, and dinner is when you're having a dinner party.
Okay, and then what do you have for supper? Is it the same as dinner? The same food?
No, it's usually much, it's like a bowl that you eat something out of a bowl.
Okay. So like a snack, kind of.
Well, yeah, a sup, yeah. But in generally, the lunch is the big one.
Oh, okay. Well, that's great. That's good to have a larger lunch. And then what about, what's tea? I hear that a lot in Scotland and England.
Yeah, well, tea means supper. It's like, beans on toast, egg and chips.
Okay, so a smaller,
like the father might come home for tea. This is back in the day when the father went out down mine and all that, okay, and have a large meaty meal. That was meat and two veg. That's the standard fare in Britain.
Right. Yeah. Well, okay. So that's getting on the right track then, actually, to have your largest meal at lunch. Here in the U.S., generally the largest meal is supper time. And so, that's actually when our Agni is a little bit lower and we should have more of just like a soup, something that's easy to digest. This will be different for children. Children are just growing so much that their appetite is a lot larger because they're just building so much tissue. They're going to need a little more food in general. And then of course it also depends on the individual, but as a general rule, largest meal, lunch, and the same time every day. That will really foster a more healthy digestive fire. So that's one thing that you can do to actually ultimately help your rasa, which will ultimately help bring on and nourish fertility. So it's kind of like a chain of events, and going back to basics, that can really make a big difference. Another thing I like about Ayurveda and how it can support fertility is that it really empowers the person, the individual, to nourish themselves and to make changes for themselves, as opposed to giving their power away to someone else to do it for them. And that's different than receiving guidance and, you know, receiving a healing. That's certainly important, and that's a different kind of thing. But it's really up to us to kind of do the work. I know, you know, in a lot of other of your interviews that I've listened to, when people are talking about other beings from other planets or other dimensions coming in, you know, there's sometimes this desire for us to want to be saved, because it's freaking hard living here. there's a lot going on. And there's that can be that wish to feel like we don't have enough within ourselves to heal and to make a change. So Ayurveda really does try to empower people to remember that they actually have it within themselves. They have the ability to make those shifts to heal. And you really go back to basics to do that. You know, you can really go back to, okay, what do I take into my body and how do I eat? So another practice. And let me know, JP, if I'm going too fast or, you know, if there's a question in the chat that I should address.
Well, they're still stuck on which one's breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So I'm thinking we're going to have breakfast. Elevenses.
No, elevenses.
Elevenses. lunch. Mm-hmm. Afternoon tea, which is at 4:30.
Okay.
Supper or tea, which is at 6, and then dinner, which is like proper posh adult things with multiple multiple courses and things, dinner at 8.
That's quite late,
you know. Nobody said the Western society was any good for you.
Yeah, but you know, you can just make little nudges over time. It's really difficult when you grow up with a certain habit of doing things, and food is very loaded, not just for the substance of what it is, but also the ritual behind it and what you and your family have created. So it just takes time. So you just do it in small steps. And, you know, if you're really, there's attachments that form, like, oh, but we always have a big meal together at 6. Well, then slowly over time, you try to work that bigger meal towards noontime, and you still can have your gathering as a family at 6, but just have it a smaller meal, you know, a simpler meal, so that you can keep the parts that are actually super important and still help to maintain your rasa and your agni. So like I said before, how you eat is just as important as what you eat. And a really good, simple practice that a lot of people can start doing now is right before you eat your meal, you actually want to take a pause. And usually a lot of us will multitask and be on the computer and eat at the same time, especially if you're alone. Or a lot of, you know, there are a lot of people that drive and eat. So what you're actually doing, you're not just ingesting the food that's on the car seat beside you, you're also ingesting whatever you're driving through, whatever sensations that you're picking up as you're driving, whatever road rage you might be experiencing. Or, you know, sometimes you're actually in definitely in a fight or flight sort of feeling when you're driving, especially if it's a high traffic area. You're sort of in survival mode, so it's really hard to digest food if you're doing something like that. So I really encourage people to do their best, and you can just start with one meal. It doesn't even have to be all three all at once. It's just too big of a change. Just pick a meal where you know you're going to be in one place. You're just going to be stationary, where you can put the computer aside, and you look at your food and take one breath. And then begin to eat. And that helps you to transition from whatever dramas that you've been engaged in. It helps your body to prepare for that food, to receive that nourishment. And it sounds really simplistic, and I guess in a way it is, but it can have a really great effect. So I would encourage people to try that out. Really practical for everybody.
We have a question.
Okay.
From John Titor was here 2000. That's his handle. John Titor was here 2000. Actually, no, it's John Titor. It's not Titor. Titor is a time traveler. Meanwhile, that's not him, actually. Question for Gust. Guest, could you work on me? I'm having seasonal allergies.
Yeah, a lot of people do. It's true. So that's the question? Could you work on me?
Yeah, but, you know, you're not like a psychic healer, but you can give people advice how to work with those, I imagine.
Yeah, I can give a lot of practical advice to the person. So what I try to do if I'm speaking with someone without asking them questions, because in Ayurveda we actually view each person as an individual, so there's no overall one size fits all treatment, in Ayurvedic medicine. We try to get to know the patient and what's been going on in their lives and a little bit about their history and, their past health and also what are their predominant elements within them. Are they more of an earthy type person? Are they more fiery? Are they more air and earth, air and etheric? That would make a difference in terms of how the person would be treated. But in saying that, if someone has seasonal allergies, that sounds like something that happens regularly. It happens at the change of season, probably from winter to spring. That's usually the most common time. Some people will have difficulty from spring to summer, but it, because of all the pollens that are out. But one practice that your listener could look into is the practice of neti. A lot of people know what that is, but it's N-E-T-I. And that is, that can be done daily. That's daily irrigation of the nasal sinuses. Now, you may be able to, that's on my list, is to provide YouTube videos for people, instructional videos. But I'm sure that you could find something on YouTube where you learn how to do it properly. It's like a little neti pot that you can get, a ceramic pot, and it has a long spout. And you put filtered water that's warm, and you put in a large pinch of sea salt, and you let that salt dissolve in the water. And you put the spout in one nostril. I usually do this in the shower. Some people can just do it over the sink. But if I try to do it over the sink, it just goes everywhere. I have like small nostrils or something, and I can't aim into the sink. So I have to do it in the shower. But if you're of the large nostril variety, you can probably do it over the sink. So you put the spout in one nostril and you don't snort, don't do any snorting or anything like that. You gently tip the neti pot and your head to one side. And what will happen is the saline water will go up one nostril through the frontal sinuses and out the other nostril. Now, if you have seasonal allergies where some people will try to do neti and they're like, oh, the water doesn't even go through my sinuses. They're too congested. Then you can actually do another practice first, which is called nasya, N-A-S-Y-A. And that's actually different medicated oils that you use in your nostrils. And that helps to break up mucus and can sometimes help to clear the channels of the sinuses a little bit more before you do neti. Also, one more thing that I could offer your listener is if you know you get seasonal allergies, before you get seasonal allergies, before they flare up, practice neti. So say they flare up for you in the springtime. Neti is something that you can do all year long. But sometimes it's helpful to start before the symptoms start arising for you. So you're preparing, you know, you're taking care of yourself before these symptoms arise. There's many more things I could say if I knew more about the person, but I think that's a good start. If that makes sense. So we can talk more about how to nourish our rasa, the fluids of the body, through proper eating habits. So you take a pause before you eat. That's really important. And, a lot of people think, oh, that's no big deal. I'm not going to do that. But, you know, just have a little trust and try it before you think it won't help. I did have a patient who was in her 90s, and so some of her habits were very lifelong. You know, we all gain habits through our lifetimes, and sometimes they can be so embedded that we don't even know they're there. And so one habit that she doesn't practice this habit anymore, she made some changes, is she would watch the news as she was eating. And so I just asked her, would it be possible for a week for you to try not to look at the news, watch the news, or even listen to the radio, like listen to the news as you're eating? And that was too much of a void. You know, that's too much of a change. So if you're a kind of person who really has gotten into the habit of listening or watching news or media as you're eating, what you can do is replace it for a time with some kind of gentle music, and preferably music that doesn't have lyrics, but something that's more positive. And just observe within yourself any improvements with your digestive system. She actually found some great improvements with hers. And after, you know, just a little bit of transitioning from that old habit, she doesn't miss it one bit. So it's kind of like you have to take a little bit of a leap of faith with a lot of these practices. It's almost like we get very comfortable in our habits, and it sometimes can be difficult to change. But, you know, one motivation for changing is if you're experiencing infertility and you really want to bring another life into this world, then you will be motivated most likely to make those changes. So yeah, just do your best and bring things in slowly over time. So what else can we talk about for rasa? And the fluids. If someone has too much rasa, like they feel really watery, they feel like they have a lot of edema or swelling, their eyes are often more kind of puffy. There are ways to care for that as well. And one would be...
Yes, how do you balance out that juice? How do you de-juice someone?
yeah. Well, it's not that they probably don't feel juicy. They probably feel kind of boggy and sluggish. So if you have too much water, then you're not going to feel juicy, because juicy has kind of a lot of positive connotations to it. When I hear that word, you're going to feel more boggy and sluggish. That's what I kind of relate it to.
Yeah, because juicy is not watery.
No, exactly. It does have a watery quality to it, but it also has a vitality. So if you have too much of the watery quality, it starts to become kind of boggy and heavy. And so there's definitely a difference. And so ways to kind of balance if you have excess rasa or, you know, too much of that boggy, watery quality, you can think about having a very light, meaning small portion breakfast. A smaller breakfast and including a pungent, spicy type of tea, first thing in the morning. So that would be, an example of that would be, you could use dry ginger powder if that's what you have, or you could use grated fresh ginger and you can boil, just half a cup of water, actually boil a cup of water, put a small handful of fresh ginger, or I would say like a quarter teaspoon of ginger powder in that water, and you boil it down to about half a cup. So you can eyeball that. And then you drink that first thing in the morning. And the heat of the ginger, you can actually even add a pinch of black pepper. Okay, so it's either a small handful of fresh ginger and a pinch of black pepper, or a quarter teaspoon of ginger powder and a pinch of black pepper in a cup of water that you boil down to a half a cup. And then you can strain out the ginger and you drink that first thing. That actually helps to raise your digestive fire, your Agni. And so when your Agni is higher, that helps to burn off excess rasa. Does that make sense?
All right, so yeah, so it's basically to balance out too juicy or watery, you turn up the fire and reduce the water content.
Correct.
You boil it off.
Yeah. I would say reduce the bogginess, not the juiciness.
Yeah. Because juicy is oil and water, isn't it? Oil
exactly.
Plus water.
It's
whereas
oil.
Watery, you know, and too much oil is cluggy as well, as tarry, you know.
Right. So there's, when someone is juicy, they have enough rasa, healthy balanced rasa and vitality, prana as well. So that's the vitality, that's the proper movement of the body, that's the proper intake through the senses of our existence. So when prana is balanced, then we feel vitality. It can get bogged down by too much water. And so one way to alleviate that is the ginger and the black pepper in the morning. Another way to do that is to have a smaller portioned breakfast, a decent sized lunch, and definitely a smaller sized dinner. And like I said, everyone is going to be different. So sometimes people will hold on to excess water because it can get complex because they actually are feeling quite etheric and airy and their body is craving that excess, heaviness to ground them. So it can be, you know, your body can appear one way, but actually the imbalance could be because of something else. So, also exercise, like a brisk walk in the morning, that's the most beneficial time if you feel like you're bogged down and you're sluggish, that's the most beneficial time to help let go of some of that excess water. We actually reduce weight by exhalation. So when we exhale with our breath, and if you think about our breath actually has a moist quality to it. We're exhaling that. We're getting rid of excess water that way. So that's just something to think about as well. So fertility, you want to make sure your rasa is juicy, your agni is strong. You want to make sure also for fertility, one of the biggest impacts on fertility is high stress levels. So that's our nervous system and also our mind, our state of mind and our emotional state. That affects our hormone levels, that affects our digestive system. Like I said before, if you're driving in the car and you're in a state of fight or flight, like high stress, survival mode, our digestive system will shut down. And so we're unable to nourish ourselves properly if we get into that state. So, you know, you want to reduce stress as much as possible. And it's like, oh, well, yeah, of course everyone's stressed. It's like, how do I do that? It's really going to be dependent on the person. But one way would be to limit the amount of time that you're taking in a lot through your senses, a lot of different things. So people get into the habit of always having the radio playing or always having the TV on, always having to be in conversation, or always having to watch action films at night before bed. All these things will kind of deplete us and raise stress levels. It's also really important, especially if you want to cultivate fertility, to really evaluate your lifestyle, and what do you hold most important and how can you simplify? And for some people that can be really huge, like in order to maintain a certain standard of living, like living in a certain sized home, they're really pushing themselves. But it's at the cost of their health. And so, you know, you have to really begin to do some soul searching and see if that's really going to be worth it or not. And a lot of people will say, oh, well, it's because of my family. I want to provide for my family. You have to understand that if you're in a high level of stress, then you're affecting your relationship with your family. And that's far more important than the size house you have. I know a lot of your listeners are aware of that, but it's really good to kind of reevaluate that. The importance, we shouldn't underestimate the importance of relationship and how we are with each other and how important it is to empower yourselves to maintain as much balance and de-stress as much as you can. You know, we're all being challenged right now on a really big scale. You know, we talked about in the beginning, the changes of our planet, our Earth kind of going through transition right now. Our bodies are having to do their best to kind of maintain more than one dimension, which is, you know, no small feat. So really think about ways to simplify, and spend more time out in nature. So I believe today, I don't know if it's the same in the UK, but today here in the US, it's labeled Earth Day. Is that true for there as well? I don't know if this is like a universal thing or if it's just in the U.S.
Well, you know what the U.S. is like. You know, you call it the World Series, but no other country in the planet plays baseball.
Yeah.
Nobody gets there yet, but nobody else plays baseball.
Totally.
Anyway, meanwhile, yes, the World, World Earth Day. Yeah, I suppose people are celebrating it in some way. Wasn't there something about, I've just realized why this computer is doing what it's doing. It's because I'm standing on the keyboard. All right.
There you go,
JP. Long story. It's saying, why are you doing screenshot? Oh God. Oh no. There's loads of them.
Uh-oh.
You know, one of those things when you've been standing on the keyboard and then you have to click cancel 1,000 times.
That's
what I'm going to have to do in a minute. Anyway, long story. It's all right. It's not the main live computer, so it's okay.
Yeah, I do wonder what your setup is like, you know, with, you know, all your equipment there.
Well, I've got a lot of crystals and shunga around me as well, all kind of in the system. So a lot of them are set to kind of keep a harmonic atmosphere here. And it's all right. You know, I'm quite loose in this, it is like a bit like a spaceship console, really. I got like 5 screens.
Cool.
That's very cool.
Yeah. Speaking of shunga, I ordered some and, there's one treatment in Ayurveda called Shirodhara, which is oleation of the Ajna chakra of the head. And it's basically, the patient lies on a table and they receive warm herbalized oil, over their forehead. It's a continuous stream. And it's poured in different patterns. And so I made this copper stand and the oil is held in a copper vessel. There's other types of vessels that are used as well, but I use copper. And so it's warm oil and it's a continuous stream. And so what I did, the vessel is hanging from a chain. And so what I did is I took a piece of shungite that was sort of triangular shaped. It had a point to it. And so I hung the piece of shungite. I wrapped it in some copper and I hung it from the top of the vessel chain so that the shungite was basically pointing down towards the vessel opening. Does that make sense? I don't know if you can visualize
that. Oh yeah, like it's in a funnel.
I guess so. Yeah, I don't know, but it just, like, it made so much sense to do that. And it's really exciting. And then I was thinking about the copper itself, the stand in which the vessel hangs from is kind of like an antenna. So, you know, you're bringing in through your intention, you're bringing in certain frequencies that then get infused, like the shungite kind of like focuses it as it would a crystal into the oil, which is then poured over the patient's ajna chakra in the forehead. So it's really trippy. That's actually a great way to de-stress, by the way, that treatment. There's a lot of Ayurvedic body work that is really aimed at helping to calm a person. But Shiradhara is used really specifically to calm the nervous system. So whenever I'm working with a patient who is struggling with fertility, I recommend that they get Shiradhara treatment. It's such a beautiful treatment. Your forehead is just bathed in warm oil and it's nothing like Chinese water torture.
No, it sounds, and also the way you describe it, that you go into the sort of very Neptunian dreamy sort of, mode, even just talking about it. It sounds lovely.
Yeah,
and of course, you know, people think, oh, what, poorly. People don't realize your skin is not plastic.
No.
And it's made of fats, mm-hmm. and oils pass right through it.
Yeah,
which is why massage and aromatherapy work. We should be taking a break anytime soon.
Sure.
You realize you've been talking for more than an hour, Shannon.
All right.
Wow, you know. Yeah, what's this one? This looked good. This is called, if I can get, where's my mouse?
And check your foot. It's probably under your foot.
There it is. Because I've got five screens, I've got this program that gives me one mouse controlling five screens, which is great, except I can't find the mouse sometimes. Anyway, I've got it now. So let's go with Jackie DeShannon. Let's put a little love in your heart. Oh yes, it's very important to put a little love, or maybe quite a lot of love in your heart, and then go and give it out, and then it'll fill up by the time you get back. I'm on Ever Beyond. This is JP on Ever Beyond with Shailene Tetreault, and we're talking about fertility and generation and juiciness and lovingness and building the better world from the one that we started with.
Mm-hmm. Sounds mm-hmm. good.
Yeah.
Well, I do have hesitations sometimes about national holidays and that whole thing. But I did try to keep a more positive outlook on today, you know, being called Earth Day. Now, of course, many people say, well, every day is Earth Day, and I agree. Absolutely it is. But there can be a positive outlook on this, the fact that this quote-unquote Earth Day is even in existence, because it at least helps to nudge people to think a little bit outside of the box and go outside and to contemplate what their role is. So I do see that happening. out where I'm living, you know, many people just spent the day outdoors. So, and that can sometimes be enough to help to instigate like a healthier connection to nature. So, you know, I did appreciate that. And also today, and I haven't noticed this in a very long time because I'm outside quite a bit. Today around where I live, the skies were perfectly clear and very blue. And so there was nothing in the sky. So that was also quite positive to witness. And you know, I was thinking a little bit about how I was talking to your listeners about using ginger and black pepper, to help stoke their Agni, bring up their fire. And so I was just thinking a little bit, especially since it was Earth Day and I was outside all day, and thinking about just how fertile everything is now. It's just about the potential, about everything starting to come into bloom. And there are these plants. We use plants, herbal medicine, and food so much in Ayurveda because the plants are so willing to collaborate with us and to help us remember that we are just a part of existence and we are meant to actually experience health and vitality. And so they're just there. These plants, like wild flowers, wild, even different types of weeds, what we consider weeds are actually healing plants. It's a large misnomer to call a plant a weed. And they're kind of there, and they're constantly willing to offer to us what we need to heal. And a lot of plants will come up at times of year where it's going to be especially beneficial for us. And one example that I can think of that actually really does support fertility is the humble dandelion, which I probably have talked about before. But dandelion is so rampant out here where I live and in most parts of the U.S. and I'm sure in the U.K. But dandelion is used it comes up in the springtime first, initially. I think it also has a second bloom later in the summer. But the dandelion leaf, the dandelion root, even the flowers can be used. That helps to purify rasa. It helps to purify gently in a nourishing way. It helps to cleanse our rasa fluids of our body. It helps to move the fluids in a proper way and to move out excess fluid. So, and it has a bitter taste, and that's a taste that is not encouraged in our diet generally. But, you know, thinking about actually when you make, a type of salad, you can really consider having dandelion leaf. You add that to your salad and just make a dressing that has a little bit of maple syrup in it to help balance that bitter taste. Or you can make a tea out of dandelion root. It's just such an excellent, excellent plant that can be used to help purify the rasa. And it comes out in springtime when the fluids of our body from all the melting of winter, you think about the accumulation of snow that then melts, that happens within us as well. It just helps to gently clear all that stagnation that has built up over the winter. So that came to my mind during the break. Also during the break, I was just sort of staring out into space, looking out the window, and that was quite nice to take a little pause that way. So I think actually someone, I just looked over at the chat. Yep. Dandelion is good for the kidney because it moves the fluids through the body and our kidneys filter out our fluids. So if you have healthy fluids in your body, that will nourish the kidneys. It's really a beautiful plant and it's everywhere. So we sort of take it for granted that it's not important. But it really is. And, you know, in Ayurveda, that's a tradition that comes from India. And so a lot of the herbs and plants that grow there don't necessarily grow in the part of the world where I live. And so I actually use a combination of local plants and then also herbs that originated in India, just because the history and the knowledge is very rich. There's so much knowledge about the beneficial effects of different plants and foods as well. So But just thinking again about rasa, about how to build healthy rasa, another really great and simple way to do that for people is if you're the type of person that is quite hungry in between meals, you like to nosh all the time on food, that's actually a good practice to try to change over time if you can. But if you are so, so hungry, your body type is naturally very thin, like you have a hard time keeping weight on, having cooked fruit in the morning is really great. And then you can even, if you feel like you're digesting it well, you can even have some nice fresh fruit in between meals. And you try to have fruit on its own. We forget about that. But fruit itself, I mean, that's the most fertile part of our trees and plants is the fruit. That's where the seeds are. That's the fruits, they drop to the ground, decompose, and leave the seeds there to be grown. So if you ingest fruits, you're nourishing the juiciness of yourself. So, and it's best to take fruit, if you can, on its own. We digest fruits fairly quickly. And it's just important to have that sweetness. The sweet taste really brings about a sense of satisfaction in us. And when we're feeling depleted, a lot of us will crave sweets, and we confuse refined sugars for the more healthful fruits. Fruit has enough fibers in it that it slows down. It allows us to take in the nutrients and the sweetness of food without giving us that really sharp sugar rush. So that's something to consider. If you're finding that you have a strong craving for sweets constantly, one thing that you can try to do is bring in fruit and like replace fruit for your little sweets that you have.
Yeah. I've been doing that. I've been like, my nung has been saying, you want some chocolate, don't you?
Go and
have some chocolate. You know you want some chocolate. I'm like, I don't want any chocolate. I'm trying to, like, I've got an inflamed. No, you really want some chocolate. All right, shut up. I'm going to have a banana. So.
I know. It's hard.
But no. I've got grapes. I have a bowl of washed grapes, just near the sink where I'm hovering around where the fridge, you know, I might hover towards the fridge, but then the grapes save me as I have a grape and that sort of keeps that craving happy.
And it can be pretty brutal, I know, but you know, chocolate is a medicine. The cacao powder is the medicine and it's a heart medicine. It helps to nourish, and comfort our heart. So there is medicine there and there's a reason why we crave that. It's just, unfortunately, we mix it with a lot of sugar. So what you can do is try to get the darker type of chocolate, you know, that has, you know, the 80% cacao, and that would be a better choice. And you just have a little bit and then have fruit. So, you know, you try to like honor the craving a little bit. You're like, okay, you know, I can have a little and then enjoy some fruit. So, and I try to keep things out of the house. Oh, so hard. You know, if you've got those like batch of cookies staring at you in the face, of course you're going to eat them. So, you know, you have to try to think about planning, you know, try to have less of that in your house and replace it with more fresh fruit. Berries can be really satisfying, you know, when they're in season. Right now we're getting a lot of blackberries from down south, and they're just so delicious. And so I'd rather, you know, they can be kind of expensive, but if you're going to buy a baked good, which is here probably $3, or you buy a carton of berries for $3, you know, kind of evens out. So if you get under that understanding, like, oh, food, good, healthy food, so expensive, just think about your habits and how that can accumulate in terms of cost. And that you really do have a lot of, choice.
Well, so. that is, now, I can hear your child in the background. Do you need to leave
she's
early?
She's doing, no, and I'm sorry. No, I don't need to leave early. She's actually doing completely fine. Uh-huh. She's with her papa.
All right.
And, and she's three.
All right. Oh, right. I'm thinking 6 months old, you know, maybe baby in arms.
Oh yeah. No. She's, has a wonderful will, and so sometimes, you know, she wants to do this instead of that. Yeah, she's great. So yeah, sometimes I know I was kind of like, oh, she sounds a little upset, but I think she's doing fine. Sometimes it could be because she doesn't want the pigtails taken out of her hair. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so first world problems,
It sounds way more dramatic than what it is.
Drama queen, huh? Really?
No, she's just expressive and emotional and beautiful, and it's great. But I definitely would go to her if she needed me.
Yeah.
Okay. She's good.
That's good.
Apologize that it was in the background.
Oh, no, no. So, you know, cause, you know, I'm not unsympathetic to children. It's like, you know, it's not, I'm not like saying, but, you know, do you need to go and help her? You
know, I know. No, you're always very kind and patient with that. I thought I was going to be a little bit more soundproof. I'm actually up in my office, but, apparently not.
I can recommend some acoustic foam, madam. Anyway.
It's a good idea, or maybe I'll go to my other office next time.
Alright. So look, in the last half hour, let's have a quick look, see if there's anything, somebody mentioned chocolate. Yes.
Of course. It's such a strong medicine, you know, it really is.
Alright, then,
it's used in ceremony, to open the heart, to open the emotional heart.
Yeah.
But we mix it with sugar to make it addictive. So.
Dang. Yeah, so I've been actually trying to drink, you know, to make a drinking chocolate. There's awful amounts of sugar in it, huge amounts, and I just use the milk is sweet enough. When you heat milk up, it's sweet enough.
It's very sweet. Milk so there are different tastes. Different rasa, because there's more than one meaning to the word rasa. There's different tastes that we know about. We've all heard bitter, sour, pungent, astringent, salty, sweet. All those tastes are considered in Ayurvedic foods, you know, how we prepare our foods, and they all have effects on the body. So, yeah, you're right. Milk is inherently sweet. There's actually vegetables like yams, sweet potatoes. Those are naturally sweet. Grains, so like rice and quinoa or barley, those are all have the sweet taste. That's their predominant taste. So if you're craving a lot of sweet foods, it actually means that your body is craving. Sweet is also heavy. It has the quality of heaviness to it. A lot of people think it may have a light quality because if you eat a lot of sugar, you start zipping around. But it actually has a heavy quality to it. And so if you're craving a lot of sweet, then that's an indication that you either have high stress levels or you need more of foods with the sweet taste in your diet. There's not enough of that in your diet. So our bodies and our cravings are actually very intelligent. We just have to learn how to interpret them in a way that is more helpful for us. So the sweet taste actually promotes fertility quite a bit. So, you know, if a person is feeling either undernourished or having issues with fertility, including more foods with a sweet taste is really helpful. So that could be like nice warm oatmeal in the morning with ghee, which is clarified butter, put on that, spiced with cinnamon and cardamom. And if the person has strong Agni, they can even add some freshly roasted sunflower seeds. That's really tasty. And a little bit of maple syrup. That's a super satisfying kind of breakfast to have.
We're all sharing our peanut butter fetish here. I like peanut butter and mayonnaise on lettuce.
Oh, my gosh. That sounds horrendous.
You try it. Look. Now, I say that, I say peanut butter and mayonnaise, and people go, ah, which is how I felt the first time I heard it. But it was my spiritual teacher, and lo and behold, we tried it, and we found it was good.
Wow.
And it really, because it's the olive oil in the, it's all alchemical. The olive oil in the mayonnaise loosens the tackiness of the peanut butter.
Mm-hmm.
And makes it more of a smoother emulsion.
Yeah.
And the mustard, the tang of the mustard, counteracts the sweetness of the peanut butter. And then you've got the bite, the sort of the bitterness in the lettuce leaf itself. So the three is, it's an alchemy. Try it. Try it. You will not be disappointed. It is divine. Honestly.
I will say though, you're on the right track with the idea of combining tastes. So in a complete Ayurvedic meal, all of the tastes are considered. So you may have some grain, which is a sweet taste. You could have some sautéed okra and dandelion leaf, or zucchini even, and a little bit of dandelion leaf that's sautéed together. That'll give you some astringent and bitter tastes. A little bit of a type of chutney, which would be more of a sour taste. If there's some black pepper, a little bit of black pepper in the spicing, or some cooked garlic, that's more of a pungent taste. So mixing all of the tastes together is a more complete type of meal. And so that's considered a lot. And then if someone is experiencing a kind of imbalance, then what we would do in Ayurveda is actually, for a time, include more of whatever taste is needed. Because each taste has a quality, an energetic quality that affects our physical body. So, for example, like if a person had too much heaviness, then they would need the quality of lightness added to their meals. And the taste, one of the tastes that has that lightening effect is the pungent taste, which you find in onions, garlic, black pepper, even ginger. That all has a pungency to it. And then if someone has too much lightness, they're experiencing imbalances that are about lightness, like say insomnia for one, or infertility could be another type of lightness, then they would need more of the sweet type of food, which has a heavier quality to it. So it's all about finding balances and working with our food and nature, the natural world, to bring back balance. Also with cultivating fertility, our sexual practices actually are really important, and they're going to be different for every person. And when I mean sexual practices, one of the main things that I mean is the frequency of sex. We are bombarded with sexual images all the time. It's so rampant. It's ridiculous, like in advertising and that kind of thing that's gone on for such a long time. So we have this idea that we actually should be having or wanting to have sex all the time. And for most people, that's neither true nor particularly healthy to actually have sex all the time. So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with sex and enjoying it. It's a wonderful gift and a way to communicate and enjoy life. Totally all for it. But there are a lot of imbalances with how we use sex and how much we think we should be having and that kind of thing and what it's replacing. And if we have too much sex, that actually can, over time, decrease our vitality and fertility. It depletes our rasa. It depletes all of our tissues, the act of sex, but especially if we have too much, you know, if it's not in balance, it actually starts to deplete the tissues of our body. So that's something to consider. Like if you're a person and you're feeling like, gee, I only feel like I want to engage in sex, you know, once every other week, let's just say, I'm just throwing that out as a number. Like that feels okay to me. That feels satisfying. And But I feel strange because I feel like everyone around me either wants to have sex all the time, or, you know, my partner wants to have sex more than me. That's fine. Some people actually, people who have a lot of earth and water in their constitution, can withstand the depleting qualities of more frequent sex. But someone who's very etheric and airy actually will become too depleted if they engage in sex, let's say, more than once every 2 weeks or so. And I know, you know, for a lot of people who identify as men or males, you know, they may feel a sexual urge more often, but sometimes that's because it can be sort of an outlet for relieving stress as opposed to like a true place of fertility. Does that make, am I describing that clearly?
Yeah. Keep going. Cause I mean, like, it's got to go somewhere, you know, it's like, you get, go out and chop the wood.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Go chop wood. Well, it's actually, you know, it would be important to get to know yourself as an individual. So, okay, if I'm a more earthy, watery type, I can probably healthfully have sex several times a week, and that's not going to be too depleting for me. And this could be with a self or with a partner, that they're both included in this, you know, how we have sex. And so, so if you have a lot of earth and water and your health is good, then several times a week is actually balancing and fine for you and healthful for you. But if you're a person that is naturally, kind of fiery quality, fire with a little bit of water, then it's more beneficial to have sex more like once a week. And then for other people who have, like I said before, are very airy and etheric, their, let's say like their frame is kind of petite, their bones are narrow, it's best for them to have sex less frequently, and that could be every other week or even sometimes once a month. And so now that brings up the question, well, my partner is earthy and watery, and I'm very airy and etheric, so how the heck do we come to a middle ground here? And that, you know, obviously that's a really good question and really important. So it's really about how can you find balance together in a relationship. So one could be, you know, well, maybe you look for partners that are closer to your constitution. That could be one way. Another way is to try to find other ways of being creative sexually where one person isn't having to deplete themselves so much. The other person is still feeling satisfied. So that can take on many forms, and it doesn't necessarily have to be the sex act itself. It could be, you know, the person is just needing some other kinds of physical affection and attention. So it's definitely a dynamic and a dance. But, you know, for people that are trying to increase their fertility, you definitely want to balance how often you're actually having sex. And it sounds like, you know, you may think like, oh, I should be having sex all the time if I want to increase my fertility, but it's the opposite. It actually can be quite depleting. So that's definitely something to consider. What else was I going to say about that? I think that's
all. Cycles of the moon and sex.
Well, so there is a tradition in Ayurveda where for a woman's cycle, her menstrual cycle, because it's obviously very connected to fertility, is in when it's more in balance. Although I'm seeing for fiery women tend to have start their cycle on the full moon and actually ovulate on the new moon. But traditionally, there's a viewpoint that a balanced cycle is a woman will ovulate on the full moon. So if you think about the moon, the light that's reflecting from the sun off of the moon to the earth, it's at its highest, so fullest. That would be the most beneficial time to have sex, the most fertile time is the full moon. And then the new moon would be the best time to actually take a pause. So if you want to look at it that in correlation with the moon, if you're practicing moon awareness, then that would definitely be something that you could pay attention to. So there are some correlations between how the sunlight reflects off the moon at the full moon and fertility. There's definitely that understanding in Ayurveda.
All right, we're going mad in the chat room. First of all, they were really talking a lot about cheese. Like, I don't know what happened, but the cheese just took off and people talk about brie and mature cheese and whether it's blue cheese or...
Food is a powerful thing. I mean, we could talk about that forever, you know?
Yeah.
But it's funny with cheese, actually, that... So I don't want to disappoint anyone, but the softer cheeses, so like cheeses that are old, So that would be like, you know, soft chèvre, like a goat cheese or mozzarella even, or cream cheese or cottage cheese. You see how those are all softer cheeses? Those are actually a lot more beneficial for you and easier to digest than the harder cheeses. You know, the ones that most people really want to eat all the time. The harder cheeses will have a tendency to create a fiery type of ama. An ama is improperly digested food and emotions that get stored in the body over time. Yeah, that's my little bit on cheese. So if you're going to enjoy cheese regularly, I would go for the softer cheeses and just enjoy the harder cheeses once in a while. Especially if you have digestive troubles. That's one thing to keep in mind. But yeah, food. I mean, you know, we could talk about food all day long.
I said brie, you know, and you see, there's been this thing a couple of weeks ago. I bought this brie, right? And I suddenly hit this moment of doubt. You know how you do. Am I eating this brie the wrong way?
I thought to myself. I remember that conversation.
Yeah, so I put it up on Facebook, and it's amazing.
Uh-huh. You got a ton of replies.
Everybody's got an opinion on brie. Everybody. Yeah. It's unbelievable. Everybody's got an opinion. Anyway, and then, of course, I asked Simon Parks, who's very, very middle class, and he said, well, of course, you know, if you do that, you're nosing the brie, we call it. And it brings disgrace on your family.
You knew exactly what you were talking about. Yeah. It was pretty funny. It was great.
But we still haven't found out the correct way to eat a brie. Apart from picking it up and stuffing it all in your mouth at once.
I don't think we know here in the U.S.
Lengthways or sideways,
aren't they? Help from us on how to eat it properly. Someone put food instead of sex. Well, that's a really good,
because it's all about displacement here.
Well, food and sex are two ways to nourish yourself and to help to nourish another person. So there's different kinds of nourishment. You know, we nourish ourselves with food, and both things can be used improperly, and both things can be used to heal and to nourish. So it's all about perspective and what is your state of mind, bringing your consciousness and your awareness. So someone who's undernourished physically, so it isn't just sex. It can definitely be affection as well, all forms of affection and touch. If you feel undernourished, then you may have a tendency to replace that with food, with eating. Because it is still a sense of nourishment. And that could also go the other way around. If you never really learned how to nourish yourself properly with food, you could form an attachment with sex and feeling like that is going to nourish you somehow. So it can be, it's just a fine, fine balance, and it's all about bringing your awareness to things and also being gentle with yourself about it. So when I say I work with a patient who I'm just going to make, this isn't necessarily a real person, but say a woman who's in her late 40s, she's been married to the same man for a long time. And over time, unfortunately, they were unable to cultivate their affection for each other. That can happen. That can be difficult. And she has gotten into the habit of indulging in lots of chocolate before bed or something like that, and has put on a little bit of weight because of that. What I'll recommend to her is to get a body therapy where warm oil, so this is warm oil again, is poured and massaged into her body so that she can feel nourished and she can feel the importance of that touch, of the nourishment of touch. And a lot of people over time, if they crave affection and they don't receive it, they begin to doubt that they have that need. And they feel like, well, okay, my needs are sort of getting met because I'm able to feed myself with food. So it can get quite layered. It can get quite layered. But whatever, if you're feeling a need, you know, you're feeling some kind of a depletion, then it's very real and it needs to be acknowledged, and there are ways to heal it. you know, if you're willing to look at it and be like, well, I'm not feeling healthy and I'm not feeling nourished. How can I transform the way I'm trying to nourish myself into a more healthful way? So yeah, it can be a long road for sure. So yeah, like warm milk, if you do take in dairy, there's a lot of people right now that aren't doing that, but, a really nice way to nourish yourself, healthfully is to take one cup of milk and you have to warm it up because milk, when you drink it cold, it's very hard to digest. So you take one cup of milk and you can actually have this about 1 hour before bed. It helps to bring on a more calm and peaceful sleep. So one cup of milk, whole milk, if you can have milk from grass-fed cows, that's, of course, way better. And you spice it with a pinch of turmeric powder and or cinnamon powder and or ginger powder and or cardamom powder, all those kinds of spices. And you have that before bed. That can be very satisfying and nourishing for you. And so if you have a lot of sweet cravings, that can help to alleviate that feeling. Also getting body work. A lot of people who crave physical affection sometimes get into the place where they have some kind of, they feel like they don't like their bodies or they feel like they're ugly or whatever or untouchable or, and so when you get, if you can kind of make that first step of bravery to find a compassionate person who's, skilled and aware and loving and can offer body work for you, that can be really healing in of itself. And I know it can be a hard first step if you've never done it before, but it can give you that sensation of actually feeling good in your body and feeling like, okay, this is where I'm supposed to be. So it's a really important practice to consider. You can even do it for yourself. You can start by doing Abhyanga for yourself. And that's actually a practice that also will help promote fertility. In the morning, you can use raw, organic, unrefined sesame oil. Now, I've talked about doing oil massage before on JP's show. But you can warm up the oil or you can simply pour some of the oil on your hands and rub the oil so that it warms up a little bit. And you gently rub the oil on your body. And you do that every morning before you bathe. And that will help to nourish yourself that way. And it's a great practice. So I definitely recommend that. And that promotes fertility as well because it brings down stress levels. And it gets your Agni going, gets your digestive fire going in the morning. If you actually do a little bit of massage, it helps to move all that rasa in your body, keeps it from getting stagnant. So those are some practices.
So, I mean, if we don't have like loads of time.
Yeah.
Is there a kind of slap on thing that, you know, like, not slap, but I mean, there are certain points which are key points and there are others that are minor points. You know, it's like the major triad. What would be, you know, the major triad of things that you would, if you only had the time to do 3 points, say, which mm-hmm. ones would you choose, as a massage stimulation in the morning?
Oh, you mean of the body?
Sure.
Yeah. I would do your abdomen. So your stomach area in a clockwise circle. So you can do like 3 or 4 circles on your belly. That's really helpful. For most people, doing your arms and legs, you know, it really doesn't take that long to do your whole body. It takes maybe like, we think it's going to take a long time, but you could do it in like a minute if you had to. So that doesn't take very long. Oh, are you still there?
Yep, yep.
Oh, okay. Sorry, it sounded like it cut out.
No. But, the next shows are coming along and all this stuff. Yes.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So it doesn't take very long. And so basically there's so many practices that you can do in Ayurveda. So when I work with my patients, I actually have them add one thing very slowly over a long period of time. And work at their pace. So some people are really, able to fit into their schedules practices of self-care and they can maybe add on more things over a shorter period of time. But then there are some people who can't for various reasons. Either they really do have a jam-packed life, or their tendencies in the mind, it's very hard for them to stick to a practice and to keep doing it. So what I do is I come up with solutions with them on how to be able to do things. So yeah, it's different for everybody. But I definitely recommend the Abhyanga. It's called Abhyanga, but it's the self-massage. That's really good to do that in the morning. And then for people who want to raise their Agni a little bit, the morning practice of the ginger with the black pepper. That's also really good.
Ginger and black pepper. Wow. See, there's all these things. I wake up in the morning like I just about make it to the toilet. and then a cup of tea and then maybe a couple more.
You're feeling sluggish or?
I'm feeling, sluggish and, also, I've not had enough sleep. It's just, I always feel like I've not had enough sleep.
Well, you have a pretty demanding schedule and yeah. You're up.
I'm
doing
up.
Your shift.
I'm up and I'm up and I'm up.
Yeah.
So, I must have a good Agni then.
Well, do you feel hungry at each mealtime?
I feel hungry quite a lot. Well, I'm a bit of a grazer during the midterm of the show. I'll sort of go around and I'll have some nuts and some grapes or something like that, and then come back to the thing with a cup of tea, and that's my cycle when I'm doing like 8 hours of recording it.
Oh, I can imagine. I mean, you wouldn't have much time to just sit down and have a meal because it takes time to prepare the meal as well.
That's right. So I've actually been practicing my manifestation by putting out the desire to the universe that I would like a cooked meal. And I even, like the other day, a friend of mine, she's beautiful, a really lovely friend, and she came round, she had a meal for two, and we sat in that, and she's like all over the place, driving and doing jobs and things, so it was just, we took the time to sit together and eat together, which is that's a really good thing.
That's great. Yeah. Maybe you could do that once a week.
Yeah.
So all of JP's friends, make a meal for him once a week, get together and do that. That's really great. So just start with that once a week. Sit down and have a meal.
Yeah.
It's really important.
It's, and it was also, we brought up the idea of, when you're in a community, it's important to have some meeting at some point on a regular basis. And, I came up with, because there was this whole thing about have to's, some people don't like to have to do things,
Oh, I see. A meal.
So we have to have a meeting. We have to, we have to get together. Why do we have to, So, I came up with the perfect solution, which is every week you have a jam session and people will want to go. And that's how you have your meeting. And there's nothing formal in it. We make all the meetings and there's all the chances to have a private talk with somebody about something or have a public talk with other people around the campfire. And, that's the gathering. So we gather and we create. It's a creative gathering time. I hate meetings. what's the point? Come on. I don't want to know about these money details. Just shut up. Are we skint? No. All right, then that's fine.
I know. Yeah, right. I mean, that's almost the exact opposite of creativity.
Yeah, absolutely. Bureaucracy is this thing, this creeping mass that is killing or that has consistently killed the creativity of the human race.
Yeah. Yep. There's a lot of having people feeling like they have to do things to survive.
Yes.
So. Yeah. But let's end on a positive note. So I think that JP's friends should make a meal for him at least once a week.
That would be nice. I used to have a jam session every Friday night at my studio, and I've got a cottage now. So maybe soon I'll make a space. I'll, build a little shed in the garden and we'll reconstitute the jam because people tend to keep coming.
It's great. So,
and then maybe in the jam we'll have, you know, people can make a dish and we can all eat.
I think that's a great plan.
Make a, put a curry on the stove and, or a chili or something like that.
So, well, I should go because my baby's crying for me.
I hear you. I hear you. Thank you, Chelin. It's been marvelous. As always, we, you know, we go up one little notch at a time. You're so patient with us. You're so patient.
I love it. I love being here and speaking to your listeners. So I appreciate it. Thank you, JP.
Oh, and you know, the love from the chat room is tangible. Thank you so much, Chelin. This has been Ever Beyond. Hey, come on, blow your trumpet, please. What's your website? How do people get hold of you? What do you charge? How to get an appointment?
Sure.
Is it hard?
No, it's not hard. They can go to my website, which is actually my first name and last initial. So it's CHELYNNT.com. Mm-hmm. They can also, Google, my name, CHELYNN, and Little Lotus. They'll probably find me that way as well. And all my information is there on my website, and people can email me if they want to book an appointment.
Fabulousies.
Yeah.
It's been...
Meanwhile, I'll be working on my book and, heading towards, becoming an Ayurvedic physician. So, get a lot on my plate. All good stuff.
Yay. I mean, look, it's lovely to, it's like we're all growing together, you know? We're all evolving and we're all learning our skills, and it's great to cross-pollinate and to learn stuff from the other things. Because there's no point in excluding other people's information.
Exactly. Yes.
So.
No, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. This has been...
Much love.
Much love. Ever Beyond. Good night.